from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Fortan.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today I have this is going to be weird for everybody because the first part of our Bible stories Book of Judges was actually done by Carissa, and now the second part is done by Ryan. And some people are like, I think that's going to be confusing. While I actually think that it's going to be more better because I have someone who is unfamiliar with it, and therefore I have to bring you up to speed, thus bringing everyone up to speed on this one. Doesn't that sound like a smart idea?
Isn't Judges kind of repetitive? Like, the overarching theme is the Israelites make God angry, God punishes them, and then the Israelites repent, and then God sends them a hero slash judge to help them back onto the path of righteousness. But then they stray right away from God again. God smites them, and then they cry out and say, God, please, and then he sends them another judge, and then they stray away. Isn't that like the, rinse and repeat several times? Isn't that Judges in a nutshell?
Well, I guess we're done. Thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah, kind of. All right, I'll be honest. That is the crux of the story. But here's the deal. Like, have you ever watched a movie and you're saying, like, this is exactly the same movie I've watched? Like, you know how Total Recall is coming out again?
Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you this question. Are you kind of curious about Total Recall?
Well, I hear that they're not even going to Mars in the second one.
Well, I know they're not going to Mars.
Well, yeah. It's kind of funny because in the first one, you could debate as to whether or not they actually really went to Mars, too.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, you can still debate whether or not he was actually a soldier. I'm sure they'll have their own mind fuck. But my point is, look, it's the same story. And there's so many elements, I'm like, oh my God, they aped it. Except for instead of Sharon Stone, they have Kate Beckinsale. And I'm like, that's a good upgrade.
I don't know, man. Prime, like, early 90s Sharon Stone was pretty much the hottest thing ever.
Okay, it's true. She was pretty hot. But they also have Jessica Biel, though, which was hotter than the Spanish chick. There's all kinds of nasty.
Yeah, that's true. It's always interesting. You'll notice with Arnold Schwarzenegger, there's typically a Spanish female lead hero. He was like one of the few action stars that regularly had like Hispanic lead ladies in the movie with him. And then it's kind of funny he ended up boinking that Spanish housemaid of his.
Yeah, I guess he's got sort of like Espanol fever. Mm-hmm. You know what? Here's the truth. You end up being attracted to someone who's somewhat different from you. That's not too different, because most of us don't like that. But there's someone who finds your pasty, white, skinny ass sexy as shit.
Yeah. A little bit of exotic aspects in there. I can dig that.
Yeah, you just need to go somewhere where your hideousness is masked by your exoticness. So that's like my cue. That's your cue to travel the world if it's not working out so hot for you around here. Yeah, if the pickings are slim, travel. Trust me. You'll have an accent. You're sexy. It'll be all good. You just need to figure out how to survive. That's all.
Yeah, just go somewhere where they speak English.
Yeah, where they speak the English. And you know what? Do yourself a favor. Where they speak it, but not enough that that's what you completely rely on. Because what's the point of traveling somewhere if you don't learn something new? Get bitch slapped doing that. This is bad. All right, let's get back, because you know what? Today is going to be a part two of Bible stories, and the deal is that this show is free so long as this campaign is still going on. So it's only free for like 3 more days as of right now when we put this fucking bitch out. So those of you that are early adopters and got in on that stuff, you got in on the show, and those of you that aren't, well, you're members anyway, so you're listening to this, so it's all good. But otherwise, because there's another reason why I want to sort of like put this behind the Patreon wall. Because beyond this being the part two of Judges, it's also sort of like the, we did it, guys. This is awesome.
Yeah, the Kickstarter went very well.
It went extremely well. And I mean, it's still doing well. I mean, in the last 3 days, I'm trying to bust my ass and trying to catch everybody who's either not heard of it and fucking wanted it. But because you know that there's a bunch of people that are just still trying to catch up, I've had some fans being like, I'm at 154. It's like, seriously, man? Oh, my God, you're 20 hours away from this show. You better start listening, because I need you to fucking get on this shit now.
Well, somebody posted something up on my Facebook wall. They had referenced me. They said, thanks to Ryan Harkness for his useful insight into vestigial penises.
Vestigial penises.
Vestigial penises. There we go. And I'm like, man, I haven't talked about that in years and years. So you must be like many shows ago.
I don't even remember. Yeah, that's just how it is. But, I mean, the server has been feeling the load, my friend. All these new people that have started listening. It's getting a little bit gigantic.
You'll actually have to pay more than $12 a month to host the site.
Well, thanks to everybody who pre-ordered the book, I'll be able to use some of those lofty book monies that you send to upgrade lots of things on the site. So, you know, all those times where I was talking about, like, there's this new exciting stuff happening. Yeah, I didn't have any money then. That kind of stopped things, where all of a sudden it's like, I had all these plans, guys, but because I had to do it, it sucked. So now we're not in that situation anymore. So we can all bask in that now. Ah, that glow. Because now I'm going to give you more crack. I'm giving you another Bible stories. And you know what? I think part two of Judges is better than part one.
These later judges are like better badasses. It doesn't like fizzle out like Police Academy 4, 5, and 6.
No, it doesn't. Not only does it fizzle out, but it ends like Judges ends with a civil war. That's how it fucking ends, man. It's badass. It begins like, because here's the thing, we split it up into two because there's a lot of judges. There's like 11 or 12 depending on how you count and who's a lesser judge, who's a greater judge. I don't know. Are you lesser because no one mentioned you, or are you greater because, like Shamgar, who only gets one notice, you killed 600 people with a cattle prod? I'm like, well, that's pretty good.
That's not bad. Not bad at all.
It's like, that's all he got, but I mean, at least he got that. Lesser judge? Not when a cattle prod is involved.
It's kind of like one of those Marvel superheroes that, you know, he doesn't have his own comic book, but, you know, he had that thing in the Infinity Glove where he just enslaved everybody, and that was pretty cool.
He had his moment, but he just can't carry on a comic series, and that's understandable. It's hard to, you know, you kind of have to be a really charismatic fuck. So here's the deal. Let's go back. For those of you that didn't listen to part one of Judges, and you're sort of like, I need to get up to date on what's been going on. All right, I'm going to give you the five... like the fucking 1 minute and a half dirty version. And if you want like the longer one, just go fucking listen to the first part. It's free. All right. So the Book of Judges, it opens up with like, you know, Joshua still doing his thing. One of the kings getting his thumbs and toes cut off. Although that's a sort of a bittersweet thing because he did that to his enemies too. So, you know, lesson learned. A creepy uncle gets a new bride. You know, because he wins the battle over giants. We also had, you know, the tribe of Judah have its final victories, although it stopped when, you know, people have more technology. They enslave a couple people, but a few of the tribes, including the tribe of Benjamin and the tribe of Dan, they sort of like end up being the losers in the whole thing, a couple foothills. They don't really do that good of a job at annihilating people, and that's kind of the big problem. Once Joshua dies, the big warrior dude, they sort of settle down. They stop genociding people. God gets mad, tells them that they're going to abandon him, and supposedly predicts everything that's going to happen to them. People weep. They try to slaughter animals, but that's no good. Will not be appeased. Then there's a bunch of judges. Othniel, the creepy uncle. Ehud, the left-handed guy that sort of stabs that big fatty. Shamgar, the dude who has, like, the cattle prod, kills 600. Deborah, who's the one chick that you can actually kind of count on, although who totally denigrates her accomplishments by telling her second-in-command that because she has to join the battle, he will not have honor because a woman did this. And then finally, when we last left, there was Gideon. And Gideon's sort of like the master at being the skeptic. He asks God for, like, miracle time after time again to prove that he's the man. But he manages to defeat an entire army with just a, you know, 300 warriors, like that in movie 300, except for Jews, and totally panic an army, kill everybody. And then when the last part of the story, when we left, Gideon was being asked, you must be our king. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. That's not a good idea. But instead, you shall give me all ye gold, and with it I shall construct an idol. totally defeating everything I fucking did in the first part of my life. Because guess what happens? And now we're in part two, where now the people, the Jews, have begun to worship Gideon's idol that's made of gold as a sort of god itself, and start to sin in God's eyes.
Did they know about, like, the older books in the Bible? Because you'd think by this point they would have figured out that God isn't like that.
Right, well, here's the thing, all right? Like, let's pretend, because to answer this question, I have to pretend for a moment that this actually happened, all right? And I sort of, like, want to say that, no, it didn't. But even if it did, I'm trying to put myself in the situation of, like, why would people turn against God if it's so very clear that they're going to get fucked over? And then I started to think about the kind of God that Yahweh is, right? I mean, here's the truth. I mean, bad stuff's going to happen to you all the time, right? You're it's not an unlike, sure, I mean, they're crafting a fantasy, but it's not as though they pretend that life is fair, right? The disasters will happen. You'll lose your wife or, you know, beautiful series of daughters or sons to some pathetic illness. I mean, your kid walks on a nail and now he's dead of an infection because you've never heard of the modern theory of disease. So it sucks to be you, and now your beautiful infant son is dead. So, yeah, all right, you're in those circumstances, and let me tell you something about the ancient world, okay? They had a pragmatic relationship with gods, all right? They didn't have this sort of hidey-toity, God is sort of like there, but not really there, deist bullshit. God was a sort of entity you negotiated with so that he would provide to you steady rain, you know, protection from marauders and the occasional bit of good luck. Right?
Well, what's the point? If he's not going to do those things for you, then really, that he kind of sucks.
He kind of sucks. And you know what? It's a brutal world out there. You know, there isn't even the notion of a safety net hasn't even begun. Like, I'm not even talking as a social thing. I just mean as a concept. That doesn't even exist. Safety net. I'm going to rape you and take all your shit.
Yeah, the safety net is when you no longer pull your weight, they smash your brains in with a rock.
Yeah, so we're still at that sort of stage of safety net. So you kind of have to understand that this pragmatic relationship with gods is probably the reason why you would prefer gods like, you know, fertility gods or you know, like rain gods and things like that. Because remember, you're at a stage where, as far as the Jews back then were concerned, there wasn't necessarily a need to only worship Yahweh, right? I mean, these were pantheists, or polytheists, excuse me. They had it didn't, just because you believed in one god didn't necessitate that the other ones weren't real. I mean, in some of the previous books that we're talking about, like in actually just in part one, when Ehud is escaping from the big fat Eglon that he stabbed with a knife and who shit himself, when he's escaping that, it makes a specific mention of when he was able to cross the barrier past the idols of his enemies. Why do you think the Jews had to smash idols? Is it because they thought that their gods didn't have fucking powers? Hello? I mean, that's polytheism. You believe in multiple gods. It's just that in the case of the Yahwists, they were like, our god's better and we're going to kill you if you don't believe in him. And that was a new thing. That was like the new thing, man. Fucking murder over the fact that you think your god's better? What the fuck? What a new invention that is. Okay, I'm on board. It creates otherness, and I want to kill people. Let's do this.
Well, it worked out pretty well for them. I mean, all of those polytheists were just okay with all the other religions, while these other guys just take everybody out any chance they can.
Yeah, but that's not fair. I mean, to explain why the monotheists won out, I'd have to sort of, like, go back and actually talk to you about Constantine, the Roman Empire, and that's a fucking different conversation, and how monotheism almost didn't take off with Emperor Julian. And do you want a history lesson on that shit right now, sir?
Just put it in. Just put it on a little bit of paper. Put it in your pocket. And we'll pull it out for another show.
We'll pull it out for another show. By the way, if you're wondering at any point if you're hearing weird bird sounds in the background, like there's fucking doves about or some pigeons, yeah, there are some pigeons in my house.
What, inside your house?
Yes. Well, they're specifically doves.
Are they magic doves?
They are magic doves, yeah. Magic doves in my house, and they just recently laid an egg, and they're all fucking chatty about it, and they can't shut up. No, you shut up, bird. You know what? It's always animals that plague my show. Why do I have animals in my show? Why? Because the people I care about have fucking animals. That's why.
Because we're good people, and we care about animals.
Good people. Yeah, that's why you have animals. You're desperately lonely people is why you have animals. That's why you have a cat, you sad man. That's why you have a cat. Well, now I don't have to deal with your cat, but now I have to deal with birds. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get back into judges, because now we have a new judge. Now, remember how I told you that the Jews had started to worship Gideon, the golden idol? You may have heard this at the end. Well, this is a problem for Yahweh again. He's not too happy about that. So the next judge is not really a judge. He's more of the side of executioner kind of thing. So here's what happened. Gideon has a whole bunch of sons, like some 70 in total.
It's good to be the hero, man.
Good to be the motherfucking hero. And one of these sons, the result of a prostitute and Gideon getting it on. Because, you know, this is, heroes back then got all the girls. His name is Abimelech. Despite the fact that Gideon was like, I don't want to be a king. Yeah, you know, everybody kind of wants a king. That's the truth of the matter. And as a result, you know, Abimelech makes a power grab. So he goes over to everyone in town, and he's like, look, you're related to me. I'm from town. Do you want any one of these 70 other dudes that are part of Gideon's heritage to actually, you know, rule over you? So they agree that that's a pretty bad plan, and they give him, like, a shitload of money, like about 70 silver coins. That's a pretty tidy sum. 30 pieces of silver buys you a big plot of land. So,
well, how much silver did it cost to betray Jesus? Not that much.
Jeez, I don't even remember. I don't know. Don't ask me that question right now. You're putting me in an embarrassing situation. 30, maybe? I don't know.
So, besides, who knows? Inflation, all that.
All that. Yeah, maybe pieces of silver back in Jesus' time, different than back in Abimelech's time. But whatever, you know, 70 silver coins. So what he does is he takes the money and he goes to the, you know, the equivalent of Blackwater, some mercs, and they travel to Oprah, where you know, all the other sons of Gideon are, and he kills every one of them except for one of them and manages to escape. So he kills all his half-brothers. That's a lot of people, but he manages to do it except for one. So Jotham, who hides under some bodies, I guess like a hero, while everybody dies, he later escapes. And then when everyone of the town is about to crown Abimelech as their new king, which, you know, everybody said that they wouldn't do, but they're like, you're the new king. So I'd actually say this is, you know, the Jews' first king. He's not even a judge. He's a king. He's the first king. So you'll see how good that works out. So the first king, at the crowning ceremony, Jotham comes out and he gives him a long fucking story, like a clumsy metaphors about, you know, trying to compare the monarchy to twigs and branches and shit like that. But then no one's hearing it. They're like, yeah, whatever, dude. We have a leader. This is what we've wanted. And every time we don't have a leader, things go bad, right? Like, that's the real problem. You ever feel like it's not so much like the spiritual leader dies than just like an army guy that kicked everyone's ass died, then they were enslaved? It sounds like that was the bigger problem. Like, what did God have to do with it? Nothing! The frickin' awesome guy died, and then they had to wait for another awesome dude to appear. That's just the way it is. Because they're not really protected. They're protected by other human beings. So yeah, Jotham gives him a little speech, but, you know, he runs out, and now, apparently, in one of the nearby towns, there's this dude who starts to boast that, you know, he can defeat Abimelech. You know, he's like, he's not a big deal, you know. His name is Gal. He's like this, I don't know, town celebrity. I don't know how celebrities worked back then. I guess probably if you were a good warrior or if you had a, I don't know, a giant cock or something like that, you're a big celebrity or something. But yeah, the local town celebrity in the town of Shechem is like, you know, that guy's not all that shit. I could fucking kill him. Of course, the problem is, you know, like any leader, he's got lots of spies and lots of, you know, people under his pocket. And pretty soon word gets out that this dude's been talking shit. And let me ask you this question, right? You're the newly crowned king and some, you know, like a local celebrity is saying you ain't shit. What are you going to do?
I would go onto Twitter and I would say he wasn't shit.
Well, okay, see, that's a really pussy-ass version of it. So what a real man does back then is just to assemble an army. And he brings his army to the town gates and hides everyone. And then he gets the town administrator to sort of like go to this local celebrity and be like, all right, man, you talked shit about Abimelech. Well, why don't you go face him? He's waiting for you in like this field, all right? But, of course, it's a trap. And then, you know, Gaul and his whole gang, they get ambushed. And then, you know, they're all slaughtered. And then the whole town is slaughtered. Because that's just the way that you got to do things. He storms the city. He kills everyone. And he pours salts all over the ground to make sure nothing ever fucking grows in that town again. So, yeah. He poured sugar in your gas tank, anally raped your mother before killing her.
Just ruined all the property value, too.
Yeah, it's kind of the equivalent of a dirty bomb, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, he just shows up, takes some uranium, wraps around with some fucking dynamite, blows it up, be like, nothing, it is God's will that nothing shall ever fucking survive there.
Ancient Chernobyl.
yeah, exactly. Chernobyl with salt. Now, the thing is, some of the town members managed to sort of, like, escape the initial slaughter into, like, one of the, I guess, the temple. And it's really well fortified, and they barricade the doors. Nobody's getting through, because they don't really have weapons of mass destruction back then. They don't have buster bombs or cluster bombs or whatever the fuck you call them. They don't have drones and shit. So, meanwhile, these people are sort of like in the temple, and everyone's like, all right, well, you know, this siege could last a while because maybe they got some food in there or whatever. So Abimelech has the fucking brilliant idea. He walks over to the nearby forest, and he grabs a twig, and he tells all his men, do as I do. And they take a shitload of wood, stack it all around the motherfucking temple, set it ablaze, and they kill everybody that's inside.
So is this Abimelech guy, is he supposed to be the good guy of this story? Is he the...
That's a good question, because, you know, we're going to get this at this to the end, because it appears to be God's will, all right? We're almost at the end of this guy. So after he finishes killing everyone in Shechem, I guess sort of blood drunk on his recent victories, he goes to the other town of Thebes, and he captures it as well. And they have, like, a really gigantic fortified tower. And they barricade themselves there, too. And, you know, Abimelech's like, well, you know, the fucking fire and twig shit worked the first time. I'm just going to do the same thing, right? So they grab a whole bunch of stuff, and they're just about to set it ablaze. But, the people on top of the tower, they've got stones and shit like that. And one of those stones, thrown by a woman, by the way, hits Abimelech in the head and pretty much fatally wounds him. So he's sort of like dying. And he goes over to one of his soldiers, he grabs him, he's like, kill me with your sword so that no one knows that a woman killed me. And so the soldier does him that solid, kills him, and that's the death of Abimelech. So you were asking me, is he the good guy or the bad guy? Well, because this is all God's will, because everybody was like, you know, loving all those idols, he's technically a good guy. And that's why he's one of the judges. How fucked up is that?
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Your bad guy was your good guy.
That seems to happen a lot when you look at the Bible stories. You see a guy, and you got to figure that the Bible's probably writing about them in the most positive, the most positive light that you can get. Like, imagine, you know, some kind of 50 years or 100 years from now, some right-wing book on George W. Bush where they just gloss over all the stupid things he did and really just try to present him in a good light. And he still comes off like a gigantic cunt.
Yeah, Well, but here's the deal. I mean, like, everybody's raping and pillaging pretty easily. You have to, you know, like, let's tone down how sickening we find it, put ourselves in the perspective of these genocidal monsters, and say, well, okay, the raping and the pillaging of town is things that you just do. Like, last episode, Gideon did the almost the exact same thing, minus the burning, to a town that had refused to give him food and water when he was chasing two of the, you know, like the kings that he was chasing after. Is that really the kind of response? Like, is that reasonable? Is like, well, they refused it to me, so I murdered all of them. That taught them a lesson.
And I guess when you're asking whether or not this is a good guy or a bad guy, you just go, well, is he God's man? Yes? Well, then he's the good guy.
And he's the good guy. Everything he does is good.
I do like the fact that he was killed by a woman, and that was, like, written into the book. Not that there's anything wrong with getting murdered by a woman or anything, but I just like that, you know, obviously that's a point of pride for these barbarians. So.
Don't let a woman kill me, goddammit.
But there's always a... I find this is, like, a regular thing amongst, like... you'll see this in a lot of the, you know, inter-religious shit-talking about prophets and stuff like that. I can't remember which prophet it was, but there was some kind of disagreement between these Muslim, between two Muslim sects, and the big, yeah, what a surprise, eh? And the big insult that they used to fling back at each other was their particular prophet died of diarrhea. And that was just like the big joke, is that he just shit and shit and shit and shit until he died. And of course...
how are you going to write that in the story?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's kind of like, you know, in developing countries, it's quite regular to die from just having ridiculous diarrhea because of whatever kind of, like, you know...
Yeah, before the invention of modern fucking medicine, you fucking primates, like, what's wrong with you? It's like, oh, your hero died of shitting himself. Yeah, again... No modern theory of disease, thanks to...
I do think it confirms the fact that we all think diarrhea is hilarious. Even, like, way back in the day when everyone was dying of it, they still found it funny enough that it's like a high school insult. Oh, you died of diarrhea. You suck.
He died of the shits.
Yeah.
It had no honor, the death of the shits. It's like, where was your God when he was on the toilet begging for mercy? God, why have you forsaken me?
There you go. Abimelech got taken out by a rock. At least he didn't die of diarrhea.
There you go. He did not die of diarrhea. All right, here's the deal. So the next... There's two other judges that come after Abimelech, but I guess after that whole somewhat civil war, Jews-on-Jew violence, punishment for, you know, Gideon having an idol, even though he saved the day. It's a very complicated relationship they have with each other. There's a series of relatively... banal rulers that end up sort of like in a 45-year reign in total. So you got Tola, who's pretty much too dull to mention. And then you got Jer, who's given out a shout-out for owning a shitload of modes of transportation and a bunch of bling.
So Jer is kind of like the Jay Leno of the Bible.
Yeah, he's got like, I don't know, some like 30 or more donkeys, which is like having 30 Benzes. Really?
It's pretty,
I mean, your donkey is your bed.
That's some serious, like, ancient civilization swag.
Yep. It's like, he's got 30 sons with 30 donkeys? Oh, shit. How did he get 30 donkeys, man?
Back in the day, you figure it's not that hard. You just go and kill somebody who has donkeys. And it's like, you don't even have to find someone with 30. You just kill 30 people with one donkey.
I like the way you think. You know,
well, I'm starting to get into this mindset. Like,
you're starting to get it, right? You're starting to be like, oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm coming into this fresh, so my mind hasn't been in, like, Old Testament fire and brimstone.
No. Okay, so that's 45 years of peace. Then Jer dies, and again, these guys go on to other gods. Remember how I was saying, like, why do they keep going to the other gods? But, you know... I was mentioning this, I think, on the previous show, is that you got to kind of remember that the other gods are more popular. It's like saying, why did everyone love Kim Kardashian? She's a nothing. Well, I don't know what to tell you, but if there was a god, he'd smite them all for loving Kim Kardashian, don't you think?
Yeah, he should.
That's why you know there is no god, because Kim Kardashian is still alive, and no one has been enslaved and raped into submission.
Well, she's the whore of Babylon. Revelations say it's the end of days. Kim Kardashian and Barack Obama. Bah!
Do you know? Okay, here's something that's kind of creepy, and I'll tell you. Do you know who the Kardashians are?
Giant pieces of shit.
Well, just to give you an idea, the father of the Kardashians is one of the guys who defended O.J. Simpson.
Oh.
So
the pieces of shit lawyers.
In fact, you know what? You know what they believe the Kardashian did? The lawyer guy? He may have transported some of the murder weapons and even potentially hidden them or destroyed them.
Well, isn't that a lovely story?
But he did win. And now we have the Kardashians, as rich people who weren't shamed to the Stone Age. Well, there you go. Anyways, let's move on from the whore Babylon to talk about sort of like Jer's death and how Yahweh, now angry again, like he shouldn't know better, sells them out, this time to the Philistines. And so for 18 years, you know, they're oppressed. And again, they're like, when will you send us a champion? And, you know, even by then, God is actually a little bit tired of their game. They're lamenting. And he's like, did I not rescue you from the Egyptians, the Sidonians, the Amalekites, the Moanites, all the motherfucking ites? And then still, you turn on me. And then they're like, no, please, you must rescue us. And they fucking try to, you know, sacrifice innocent creatures. But it's no good. This time, God's like, no. But they repent, apparently, and for long enough that their suffering begins to move God again. So here's the deal. God is only moved by your suffering if you love him. And that's kind of a fucked up thing if you really think about it.
He's a sadist.
I'm just going to say that's a really conditional love. That doesn't sound like a parent, does it?
Well, remember, this is Old Testament. He's an Old Testament parent. Yeah, everybody agrees. It's like not even like you won't even find some crazy Bible thumpers that won't that will disagree with this statement. God is a giant dick face in the Old Testament, just like through and through. Even like half the time, people that don't deserve anything, people that are trying to follow his orders but just kind of screw up a little bit.
Oh yeah, like Aaron's two beautiful sons who burn the wrong incense and are instantly killed. Yeah, or how everyone, like even when Gideon first meets the angel and there's like, you know, he bursts into flames and he falls on his face being like, I'm going to fucking die. That was everyone's reaction to God. So when God interacted with you, you pretty much felt like you were going to die. It's a good sign. Sounds a lot like the kind of God that people worship now, doesn't it?
And he should know this because he knows everything. So like, why would he show up and be like, I'm going to show up in such a form that it just like blows everybody's eyeballs out of their heads. It's like, yeah, you know, just tone it down a little bit, God. Just be a little bit more chill. Be a burning bush or something. That's much more relaxing.
But, you know, with this one, too, it's like I feel like God is keeping it on the wire because while he does sell them out, just around the time that this new judge called Jephthah comes around, like the enemy has amassed a gigantic army that is going to crush all the Jews, right? So meanwhile, everyone's like, in the town of Gilead is sort of like, which is where the army is amassing, is like calling out for a champion. And there is a guy that they choose, but the guy that they choose is a total fucking reject. Because Jephthah is the son of a whore. All right, sounds familiar? Because I think God likes sons of whores, by the way. I'm just going to put that out there. This is the second son of a whore in a row. But yeah, he's a son of a whore, but the problem is that his brothers are like, we don't like you, and we don't like the idea of sharing our inheritance with you, so we're going to just fucking kick you out of town. But he's also like a really fucking fantastic warrior, so apparently he develops, like he lives a few years in the land of Tob. So it's a place, sounds silly, but it's a place. Spend some time there, and he develops a kind of like badass following of like other warriors. And he starts to get a fucking reputation as a warrior and is having a band of thugs. So guess what happens when there's a massive army that fucking amounts outside of their town and they're like, we don't have no warriors. They're like, they go to him and they're like, dude, do you want like this town? Because if you kill and beat these dudes, we're going to give you the town. It'll be yours. Now, you know, he's already made a life outside this place, so he doesn't fucking need shit. So he's like, whoa, you come to me? Like, you're the assholes who fucking drove me out. Why are you coming to me now? And they're like, because we need you. because we're going to fucking die. We're going to be fucking enslaved. You got us. You can do whatever you want, and we'll do whatever you say. Like, they're pretty much showing their anuses right now. It's like just pointing it in his fucking face and being like, do whatever you want with it. You can even put a broom in there. We don't care. So he, you know, like, it's a pretty sweet deal. So who doesn't want to take that deal? So he answers the call. And unfortunately, you know, like most times in this book, I'd love to tell you how he wins. Like, you know, if there was like one of those, and then he did this kind of thing. Unfortunately, truth is, like, he's just, you know, the Bible's like scene missing and he wins.
It's kind of like Game of Thrones, where they obviously don't have the budget for like battle scenes. So every single time somebody will get knocked out, or someone will fall asleep, and then they'll just cut to the next scene, and the battle is magically over with no millions of dollars spent towards actual action.
It's like, whew, that was tough. Well, they did that a few times. Remember in Rome? I mean, I love Rome. They did that all the time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like a standard budget-saving thing where they just look at it and go, no, we're not going to show this battle. It's just not going to happen. And it's too bad because, I mean, Braveheart figured it out. You just take a bunch of people, throw them in kilts, and have them run into each other.
All chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? They could have just showed it from the perspective of one soldier who gets pretty much mowed down 5 seconds by an elephant. Don't tell me that's impossible. That's all I need. Shit. Anyways, okay, there's a bit of a scene missing, but I do want to go and tell you that before the battle starts, actually, he sends, like, a note over to the king demanding to know why they're going to attack this town. He's like, why are you fucking killing us, man? Now, some of you may remember that they stole this land from other people, right? Like, you guys remember that? That happened the last book. Book of Joshua, where, you know, two spies get sent out and they find a place that's nice and ripe and then they fucking take it over. Yeah. So that's pretty much the king's attitude moving in. He's like, you killed my fucking fellow countrymen here and you're asking me why I am attacking you? And of course, Jephthah says, well, you know, like, God gave us this land, so, you know, why don't you go live where God gave you your land? That's his sort of final, you know, I don't know, justification is the best way to put it. Like, does any of this sound convincing to you?
It sounds familiar, that's for sure.
Right, so, okay, so the king's not having any of it. They're not set for, you know, like, he's not having, it's like, oh, well, that was really convincing. Thanks for that. Yeah, I'm just going to go home because you said that your God gave you this land when you killed everybody. So, before the battle begins, I got to tell you, they're really seriously outnumbered. And Jephthah makes a bow to God. He says, God, if you grant me victory today, I will kill and burn the first thing that comes out of my house to greet me. That's for you, if you help me commit this genocide.
That's just messed.
That is a weird oath, isn't it? Like, number one, who do you think is going to come out? I don't even think I need to tell you what's going to happen. What do you think happened?
Well, maybe he knows that he has, like, a doggy door or something like that. Or maybe he's got, like, my pet goat. The goat always, like, runs up, puts its hooves on, like, the fence, and it's really adorable. And in that case, it would be quite upset because you've got a goat with, like, a good personality. And sacrificing that...
I mean, it's sad. You know, you probably had, like, another 10 years of this goat.
Yeah, all this milk and delicious goat eggs.
I'm sorry, what?
Nah, I'm just fucking with you.
I'm just saying, what milk?
What, goat milk?
They only lay eggs. What's wrong with you? So, yes, he makes this very strange vow that doesn't seem to make any sense, but, you know, I think he has his reasons, and...
God is like Jigsaw. He likes twisted shit.
Oh, yeah. He's like, if you don't saw off your leg or kill this man to get the key, you're not going to win this victory. So... he makes a vow with God, and sure enough, he wins. But, you know, it's that whole scene missing. How does a tiny army of thugs defeat an entire hardened, you know, battle-ready enemy?
God.
I don't know.
God. God did it.
And by the way, if you were waiting for the Ark of the Covenant, again, Book of Judges, that thing never even seemed to have ever existed in their minds. So, what's the Ark of the Covenant? It was a super weapon we had before, but now it's been entirely misplaced. Someone's holding on to it. I don't know what they're doing. I'd be scared of it, though. I'd bury it under the sand. I mean, remember what happened last time when the Jews were carrying it? Go listen to the stories of Moses. Every once in a while when people started complaining about how shitty things are, he just started killing them. So it's best not to hang around the Ark.
Yeah, carrying God around with you just seems like a really dangerous idea. God is like a really overbearing parent who has opinions on everything that you do and isn't afraid to, like, totally punish you.
Yeah, in the most lethal way. To send you back to him in spiritual form. Like, you're coming back to me as raw energy, bitch. I can't stand your fucking biological mouth fucking flapping about. So you're about to die. And I might send you to hell, though. That doesn't come later, though. Remember, the Jews don't have hell. They just have non-existence with God. Which actually sounds better than existence with him, because he sounds like a big giant dick. So I'd be like, can I check out of this whole God thing? Thank you, but no thank.
You can see why, like, after when reality is so shitty, that they'd be excited about the fact of nothingness. Like, we're so terrified of it in our modern day
and age.
We're
terrified because,
like,
life is good.
Oh, yeah, and it's because we're so overstimulated. I mean, I can't take a dump without checking Twitter. So the idea of doing nothing for eternity, of having nothingness, freaks me out. These people are like, oh, you mean it means that my horrible infected hemorrhoids that have been with me since I was 18 and will be with me until I die at the age of 31?
My pulsating pussy dick that's making me insane? Yeah, like, yeah, I'm not going to have that to worry about anymore?
My horrible cracked teeth and my stump from fighting this crazy King Sihon.
Please don't deliver me from this beautiful life. Anyways,
the kind of horrible parasites that might have existed back there and that everybody must have had.
It's like, hey, today I'm not shitting blood. What a great day. Yeah, pretty much one of those fucking but apparently I guess that's better. So yeah, let me just say that never make a vow with God, because when he gets home, sure enough, his daughter runs out, be like, oh, daddy, I've missed you. Hey, genius. I guess your dog wasn't fast enough. So now he's all heartbroken. And he's like, oh, no, my daughter. I am so heartbroken because now I must kill you because I have made this vow with an invisible man. And now I will take you, my only daughter, and I will kill you. Now, she is accepting of this fate. Apparently she's like, well, you know, a vow's a vow, but please, can you give me 2 months so I can go with my friends and quote-unquote lament my virginity? End quote. Now, I want to ask you, what do you think happened during those 2 months?
She got busy.
Oh, motherfucker, did she get busy. But here's the weird thing. Ever since then, it is a tradition for women to sort of, like, young women, virgin women specifically, to go off somewhere and lament their virginity. I think that's just sort of like it's an excuse to go have a raging kegger and get fucked. That's just me. I just know a good party when I see one.
Yeah, that would be a really interesting cultural, like, you know how you could go and there's all these Jewish scholars who analyze the Bible from every aspect, and they've got books and books and volumes and entire libraries devoted to everything.
And
I want to go to
the
them.
Same thing about Star Wars, and I have just about as much respect.
I want to go over there, though, and talk to some of them and get more information about this lamenting of all these women who went away and lamented dying a virgin. Get the details on that, because I'm sure there's some interesting stories.
Well, I mean, if you want a really interesting story, read the book Unorthodox, and it's about this young girl who was an Orthodox Jew, or actually even more than Orthodox, excuse me, fucking Hasidic Jew. And she talks about all of these, like, weird rituals of, you know, cleansing and shit like that, which ironically, like, there's this one part where they bathe her, and because they have no knowledge of hygiene, she got shingles after it because of how dirty their bath area was.
That's really gross.
Yeah, I shared a really delicious bit there. Read the book, it's fucking awesome. I'm still trying to get her on the fucking show, by the way. It's hard because, you know, I think her book did really well and we suck. All right, let's move along. So, okay, So they have, you know, their victory. But of course, the tribe, like one of the local tribes of Ephraim, mobilizes their troops because they feel insulted that they were not brought in on this fight. So this is now Jew on Jew, sort of like animosity. So they want to fight, and they go to him and they're like, why did you disrespect us? And, you know, Jephthah replies, well, I did send you an invitation, but you didn't answer it. And that's not good enough. So them's fighting word, and they fight, and when they try to escape, basically at the river, anyone who cannot pronounce the word Shibboleth properly is murdered. And that's like some 42,000 men.
Did you pronounce it properly?
Probably not.
You gotta do it with Shibboleth.
Hi. Yeah, if you didn't say it like a true Jew, man, it's like they put the sword to you.
Yeah, if it wasn't like the proper caricature of a hoi Shibboleth.
Shibboleth.
There you go. You're okay. Spared.
Yeah, I'm spared. I will not be killed at the river. Okay, so Jephthah, excuse me. Sir,
I'm taking that back. You're going to die now.
Going to fucking die. Is a judge for 6 years, which is not a hell of a long time, by the way. And now there's a succession of judges. And again, it's sort of like, I got news for you. It's like three lesser judges. So you got Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. You don't even really need to sort of like know any of their names for any specific reason. One of them like has a shitload of sons and daughters, so that's what's noticeable about him. So that's Ibzan. He's got like, I don't know, 37, something like 30 daughters, or who knows, who cares a shit. Elon survives for 10 years, and he doesn't get a fucking mention outside of where he gets buried, so I'm sure he was good. And then he's followed by Abdon, who, like, remember Jer, the guy with the, like, the 30 fucking Mercedes Benzes? Well, Abdon's kind of like the same thing. He's got like a shitload of vehicles and a bunch of grandsons, which is really important because they don't have vaginas. And he rules for 8 years. And then that's the end of those judges.
Not very remarkable judges.
Not very remarkable in any kind of way, like I said.
Are these guys kind of like, you know, remember in like some of the earlier books where they'll just go, and then Ezekiel begat whatever.
Well, it's not really begat. It's more like, and then Ibzan was buried here, and he ruled for this many years. It's actually like one sentence or two. Shit, you not. It's not a lot.
No tales. No tales.
No fucking tales, man.
How sad is that, where you're like, I'm in the Bible, but then you don't even have a tale?
I know. It's like, fuck. They mentioned my name and who my dad was and where I was buried. Shit.
That means you were a pretty shitty judge.
That means you were probably pretty crappy. Now, the next judge is actually, this is seriously my favorite story in the Bible, by the way. I was asked this on one of the podcasts I was interviewed on. They were like, what's your favorite? Samson, judge number 13, is my motherfucking favorite. Lucky 13.
This is the Samson? The Samson with the hair?
This is Samson with the motherfucking hair, man. This is this judge. This story is about to happen.
I love that guy.
This is about to happen. So, okay, after a string of really boring judges, they get subjugated by the Philistines for like 40 years. And by the way, if you're wondering, who are the Philistines? Like, did you ever study Roman history? Remember when they were fighting the Carthaginians and all those people? Like the seafaring people? No, have you never studied any history whatsoever? What do you know other than fucking fiction?
Nothing really.
Okay, fine. Well, anyways, if you've ever heard of Carthage, these Phoenicians, well, those are pretty much the Philistines. So they were just like the seafaring peeps. They were the guys of the boats. Always staying near fucking, you know, towns with waters. But anyways, the Jews get sort of conquered by these guys for 40 years. Now, there's a childless man by the name of Manoah who lives in a town called Zorah. None of these you need to remember for any specific reason. But he receives good news in the middle of the night. His wife gets visited by an angel who predicts that they will have a child. And that if this child is... like, if you never cut this kid's hair, if he never drinks alcohol, and if he never walks over a dead body, He will have superhuman strength as a result.
Sounds like Justin Bieber.
Now, he cut his hair, man, a few times.
Yeah, it's true, eh?
Could you imagine if you had a child and never in his life did you ever cut his motherfucking hair? Like, there is a maximum length to hair, by the way. You know, that's why people who hold Guinness records have, like, a special kind of hair. But I think the longest it gets for most people is right down to about a little lower than your ass. It's about as long as it'll go.
Princess length.
So this is what Samson looks like. So he's what's called a Nazarene. That's the fucking, you've never drank, you've never cut any of your hair or shaved or anything. No metal has ever touched your body. And you have supernatural strength as a result. So, but here's the deal. Manoah's kind of confused by what his wife says. And let's just say a little bit skeptical about this whole claim. You see, back when people had some skepticism about them, yeah, apparently that's something that only lasted a few hundred years. So Manoah sort of like prays to God and he's like, all right, can you just come bring an angel back and he can explain this shit a little bit better than my wife is telling me? Because I don't get this. Are you telling me never to cut this fucking kid's hair? That sounds kind of crazy to me, right? So this angel appears, but here's the thing I want you guys to remember. Angels, no one knows they're angels when they appear. So they don't have wings. They don't look obvious. They're just a dude who happens to be an angel. Okay? So that's why everyone's confused, because at first when this angel appears and tells him that, you know, lays out the same rules, and then, you know, Manoah's still confused, and he's like, well, I'm going to slaughter a goat for you. And the angel's like, okay, but I'm not gonna eat any of it. I don't know why that's important, but he's like, I don't want to eat any. It's like, apparently, they don't eat fresh slaughtered goats. So, he takes this offering, and, you know, he asks the angel before he gives him, what is your name? And the angel's like, bitch, you wouldn't even get it if I told you. So, he's like, got one of those mysterious names. You know, every once in a while, celestial beings seem to like to do that. There was an episode back in one of the earlier Bible stories where God's like, I can't tell you your name, for ye shall not comprehend it. I'm like, well, just say it. I don't care if I comprehend it. If it sounds like fucking gibberish, then I'll be like, it's gibberish. Whatever. But, like, what are you, like, don't respect my intelligence or something? Like,
it's something very snarvy, like, snarf, snarf, bling.
You wouldn't even fucking get it if I told you. It's like, well, why don't you just try, man? What's the worst that's going to happen?
It's like such a hipster answer.
I know. I also love, you know, like when Moses goes to the bush and he's like, what is your name? Because they're like, apparently, I think back in the day, everybody always asked your name. It's like pretty much the best form of ID you had back in the day, right? It's like, who the fuck are you, bro? And the first time the bush answers is like, you know, I am who I am, yo. Like, what? Are you playing games, man? What is up with you? You couldn't comprehend it. I am who I am. Fuck you, man. Fuck you and your games. All right, so he brings it to the Mr. I can't tell you what my fucking name is because you wouldn't understand. So he puts down the goat offering, and then all of a sudden it bursts into flames, and the angel fucking takes off with the flames too. I don't know how that works. They don't really describe the imagery very well, but I guess he disappears in the flame. And now both Manoah and his wife are like on the ground. They're like, we're going to die. Sound familiar to you? Yeah, they do it too. And they're like, this is really bad. And then the wife is like, who I kind of respect by now. She's like, look, all right, if he wanted us dead, we'd be dead by now. So obviously it's probably good news. Because he did tell me that we're not supposed to do anything that seems normal with this kid. Like cut his hair or give him liquor, you know, when he's noisy. So they have a kid and they name him Samson. And Samson is one of those, like, I don't know. He seems like one of those kids who just tells his parents what he wants. Right? Because when he's a teenager and he sees, like, this really attractive Philistine woman, he goes over to his dad and he's like, I want her. Get me her. And it's not even a conversation. It's like, I want her and you're going to fucking do this because I'm Samson. So the dad's like, all right, okay, whatever. At first he objects, but because they don't like foreign people. They're racist. But they're like, all right, whatever. You know, he's going to probably beat me up if I don't do it. He's probably afraid of his own child. So, They head over to the town where she's staying, and on the way, Samson sort of like wanders off to a nearby vineyard to steal grapes, And all of a sudden, a big lion fucking ambushes him, and he basically tears his face in half. Tears the lion's face right in half, and it fucking dies. But he doesn't tell his parents, and they walk back into town, because I guess it's not a big deal. And, you know, like, they meet with everyone, and, like, the arrangements are made. And, you know, like, they're set to marry. So, after a little while, because I guess these things take a little while, he's walking back to town, and he sees the lion that he killed, and there's apparently a beehive in the carcass. Now, I don't think the authors of the Bible really understand how bees like to do things, but I'm betting that a lion's carcass is not the best place to have a beehive.
It's cool imagery, though.
It's cool imagery. So, you know, like, there's this carcass with all this bee and honey, and so he just grabs some because, you know, he's Samson. He doesn't have to ask for permission. He just takes. Samson takes, bitch. So he takes some honey, he eats it, and he brings it back to his parents, and he gives it to them. But again, he does not say, he doesn't tell anybody where he got the honey or what the fuck, like, the weird story of it. He just keeps it to himself. So, okay, it's about to be the wedding, and Samson throws a big party. And, like, he invites a whole bunch of, like, townsfolk that he doesn't know to the party. And during it, he sort of, like, tries to make a wager. He's like, I bet you 30 shitty robes and 30 nice robes. I don't know why. I guess he just needs more. He needs a wardrobe for his wedding. He's like, I bet you 60 robes that, like, I can ask you a riddle and you won't solve it. So they're like, okay, let's do it. So I'll give you the riddle and you can tell me if this sounds fair to you. From the one who eats comes something to eat. Out of the strong comes something sweet.
It's like a riddle that only he would get.
Yeah. This is a bullshit riddle. So, you know, everyone's kind of peeved. After a couple days, what they do is they take his bride and they put her to the side and they're like, okay, if you don't get him to tell you the answer, we're going to kill you and your dad.
Jeez. This is some good wedding guests.
So, she goes back and she starts nagging him. Now, I got to tell you, here's the thing. Samson, his only vulnerability was naggy women. Okay?
Oh, it's just another case of the Bible saying don't trust women.
Don't trust women. So she starts to nag him and nag him and nag him. You're like, you don't love me. You won't tell me the answer to this riddle. So finally he acquiesces, tells her the answer. And then, you know, those 30 some odd thugs, because everybody likes the number 30, come over and they're like, the riddle is a lion. And like, fucking Samson is furious. And he's like, if you hadn't fucked my wife, which he calls a cow, because he calls her it's like, if you hadn't fucked my heifer, he means literally his wife. So he's like, you wouldn't know the answer to this motherfucking riddle. So I guess they didn't just threaten her. They probably raped her. Anyways, so he travels to the nearby town of Ashkelon. You may have heard it a few times. I mentioned it in the last one. It's like one of the nearby towns. So he goes to that nearby town and he murders 30 innocent people to take their robes so that he can pay his debt.
Oh, I don't remember that part of the Samson story. They don't have that in the cartoon version.
Right. So he goes back to live with his parents and he's like really all mad. But once his head cools down a little bit, he travels back to Timnah, which is where his wife is, with a goat offering and a desire to fuck. He's pretty much horny. I don't even know if he really wants to sort of like get back. He just wants to fuck her, right? This is how Samson is. So he arrives at his father-in-law's house, but his father-in-law is like, oh, I didn't know you still wanted her. I kind of married her off to your best man. And now you know why a best man is around. Ta-da! The best man is there to marry the chick if you back out.
Yipes.
Yeah, so pick your best mate carefully. Because if you get cold feet, he's going to fuck your wife. So, yeah, he tells her that she's married off. So Samson's really, really peeved. And he's like, I will not be held responsible for my actions. Like he has before. He killed 30 innocent people. This is not a man who is responsible for his actions ever. So he just goes to the forest and he magically captures 300 foxes. I know, that's a lot of foxes, right? But, you know, he's Samson. He's got superpowers. So he captures 300 foxes, and he ties a torch to their tails, and he sets them loose on the fields, and they all fucking burn down. Now, the Philistines are not too happy about their, you know, grain fields and food crops being destroyed. So they take revenge on Samson's father-in-law, because I guess that's just someone who knows him. Not like they were friends or anything. So they burn down his house and, you know, kill all his loved ones, including the woman that Samson wanted to fuck. And this makes Samson very angry, because he wanted to bang her real bad. So he goes into a berserker rage, kills a shitload of them, and then he goes to hide out in a cave. So now that he's disappeared, the Philistines, they start raiding some of the nearby, like the nearby town of Lehi, and they're like, you know, and the, you know, the tribe of Judah sort of like goes to Samson, and they're like, look, man, you've angered these dudes, and they're taking it out on us. And Samson's like, look, it's just payback. But the tribe of Judah's like, we have to deliver you to these guys, or else they're going to continue to kill us. So Samson's like, okay, I'll come with you guys. You can tie me up, but you got to promise that you're not going to kill me. So they're like, all right, we're not going to kill you. So they deliver them. They deliver Samson to the Philistines, and the Philistines are all like, yay, we capture Samson. This is a happy day, and blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, the Spirit of the Lord, and you know what? I feel like I should say the power of Grayskull, because that's a little bit clearer. The power of Grayskull takes fucking Samson over, and he snaps the fucking ropes like a twig, grabs a donkey's jawbone, and then murders 1,000 Philistines with a jawbone.
See, now that's the part that I wish, like, you could have, like, a really cool Matrix-style movie rendition of that scene. Just ripping a jawbone right out of a donkey's head and just killing 1,000 dudes with it.
I gotta tell you, though, I mean, like, a jawbone, is that the best weapon? I would have just taken his femur or something. Why a jawbone?
I'm sure back in the day, it's like, that was like a standard visual. It's like picking up a rock and smashing somebody with it. There's like always, you know, bones around. You pick up a bone and you club someone with it, but a jawbone is pretty badass.
Yes, maybe it seems like a makeshift brass knuckle, or I'm not quite sure what. Like, how would you use a jawbone from a donkey? It's not like they have really sharp teeth.
Well, it's long enough, so you grab it on one end. Maybe some of the teeth are falling out, but on the back end, I'm sure they've got like jagged kind of things, so you can slash and club with it.
True, no one said it was like a complete jawbone. It could have been a fractured, super sharp jawbone.
Very true. It could have like a nice stabbing edge.
So it's pretty much a shank, is what you're telling me.
Sure.
A shiv.
It's like a combination of everything. It's like a saw, a club, and a shank.
It's like a super shiv. Okay, so he kills 1,000 Philistines, and he's all thirsty and shit like that. And then he, you know, because Samson is used to asking God for shit. And he's like, God, I'm fucking thirsty. Give me some water. And then all of a sudden, God, like, makes water appear out of geyser. Because if you kill 1,000 Philistines, apparently God's going to, like, give you whatever the fuck you want. And at that time, it was water. So he names the place the Spring of the One Who Cried Out, rather than the place where I killed 1,000 people with a jawbone. And Samson rules for 20 years. Pretty uneventfully, in fact, until he travels over to Gaza to have, a fuck-on with a local prostitute. Let's just say that Samson has an appetite. He likes to kill and he likes to fuck. That's who Samson is. He's like Conan. Is he not like Conan?
Yeah, he's always... I always kind of like, when I think of Samson, I think of He-Man for some reason.
Well, that's why I said Power of Grayskull, right? Look, it makes sense.
Yeah.
He's like Power of Grayskull with Conan's unrelenting, like, sexual drive.
I mean, the reason that we like this story so much is that it has, like, kind of a, like, a Greek overtones to it. I always found that those mythos were much more entertaining. The stories were, they made a lot more sense, and they were, you know, from start to beginning, the storytelling was, like, a lot more solid. A lot of these Bible stories, they feel like, you know, a Chinese romance where just...
Well, it's not just that. Sometimes it's so short that I'm like, it's not really a story. You know, I almost want to apologize sometimes saying, you know, these are not really great stories. So I'm going to do my best to try to say it in, like, the most entertaining way possible. Because let's all get through this. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Let's all just get through this. So, okay, so he goes to fuck a prostitute. And while he's in town, like, you know, a whole bunch of the locals are like, all right, we're going to set up a trap for Samson in the morning and we're going to fucking kill him. But, you know, true Conan / you know, Power Grayskull style, he, right after he finishes getting his fuck on, he just walks out of town, rips the gate off, and just, like, you know, tosses it aside, and then that's it. Now, a little while later, he falls in love with a woman named Delilah. This name should sound familiar to all of you who barely read the Bible. Samson? Delilah? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's the Delilah story. And it's going to just totally blow your mind once you're like, why? All right. So the Philistines hear that, you know, Samson's got a kind of, like, thing for her. So they go to her and they offer her 1,100 pieces of silver if she gets them to... if she gets him to reveal the secret of his strength. I want to remind you guys, how many pieces of silver did it take to buy land? 30? This is 100 and, you know, this is 1,100 of these.
Yeah, this is like 35 Jesus betrayals worth of silver.
This is a lot. This is sort of like millions of dollars. Okay, so clearly she has a financial incentive. So, you know, Delilah hooks up with Samson, blah, blah, they get together, and then she starts to nag him about the source of his power, using that familiar line of, like, you know, I thought we trusted each other, blah, blah, blah. All right. So she starts nagging him, and at first he says, well, here's what you do. You take 7 undried bowstrings, and you tie it around me, and I'm going to be as weak as a girl. So he falls asleep. She ties him up, and then all of a sudden she sort of wakes him up. He's like, watch out, the Philistines are here to get you. And, of course, he breaks these things like they're twigs, and then he just laughs. Ha, 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 you know, I made a fool of you. And then she's like, oh, you me, you big me, you made fun of me. So she continues. This happens, by the way, a countless amount of times. I don't know if I should go through all of them, because at one time it's like, oh, use my hair. Oh, use, like, new rope. It's all this, and then every fucking time he goes to bed, she fucking ties him up, and then he just breaks through, and he's like, ha-ha, I tricked you, you're dumb. But eventually, the nagging gets to him. She just nags and nags, and finally, he tells her the truth. Why? I don't know.
Maybe there's a parable in this about never telling your wife the truth.
Maybe. Don't tell that bitch one word of the truth. That's what the Bible says. But yes, sure enough, he falls asleep. She cuts off all his hair, and he gets captured by the Philistines, who gouge out his eyes and then put him to work grinding wheat with, like, you know, instead of a donkey doing it, like, you're just pushing it. So he just does that for a long time. Like, actually kind of like in Conan the Barbarian, where he does the exact same thing.
Yeah, totally like Conan.
Yeah, he's grinding that fucking wheat. And like Conan, gets all super mega fucking strong again, and his hair starts to grow. And then a few years later, the Philistines are having, like, a pretty badass party or something like that. And they're all drunk, and they're like, bring Samson out, because, you know, I guess he's a big deal. So by then, you know, Samson's got a long thing of hair. And they bring him out, and, you know, they're all like, yeah, they jeer him. They're like, we're the winners. So he goes over to his guards and he's like, can I just lean by these two pillars because I'm really tired? And, you know, like, he's a blind guy. What do they have to fear? So he's just leaned by the pillar and he's like, okay, God, here's the deal. Fill me with the power of Grayskull and I'm going to kill every single one of these motherfuckers. And I'm going to bring this down on me. And it'll be all for your glory. Nothing but humans being murdered. And God's like, it's cool with me. And then, bam, given the power, fucking knocks down the tower, and everyone who is laughing at Samson dies.
And they get 9-11'd.
They get 9-11'd. Pretty much, actually, because there's about 3,000 people. So, yeah, Samson 9-11's them. And here's the thing. This is the end of the judges, but it's not the end of judges, per se, right? So there's no more judges beyond Samson, okay? But there are two little stories that I do want to just sort of, like, quickly go into because they're kind of hilarious, the circumstances. The first one is that there's this guy named Micah, all right? And he steals $1,000 or 1,000 shekels from his mom. And then he later sort of like, ah, okay, I stole it. And she's so happy that he's honest that she takes 200 of those shekels and they build an idol. You know the thing that, you know, you're not supposed to build? They build one. Anyway,
but they keep building.
I know. They keep building it. So he has it in his house. And then he spots a Levite as you know, this is the priestly class, and he spots one who's walking by his town, and he's like, hey, dude, do you want a job? Room and board, man, 10 pieces of silver a year, and you just be my priest, and then fucking God's going to love me, and I'm going to be set. So he agrees, and then a little while later, the tribe of Dan, the guys that didn't get to conquer anybody or slaughter anyone, well, they pick 5 warriors to go scout out the land. And some of those warriors stop by Mika's house, and they spot this fucking idol, and they're like, okay, well, what's your deal? And he's like, oh, well, I'm, you know, like a priest of God. And they're like, well, is God going to be on our side? And he's like, yes, somehow giving them assurance. So they go to this nearby town of Laish. And Laish is kind of, it's like a utopia, dude. It's peaceful. There's like, it's lush. Everyone's like, there's no warriors. It's just kind of a paradise. So they head back to town. They're like, this place is ripe to attack.
This place is beautiful. So peaceful.
So peaceful.
We'll roll right through
Let's
them.
Let's slaughter them all. They're also very far away from their allies. So this is pretty much perfect. God has given us this land because everyone's a weak fool who will easily slaughter. This is how they interpret God's plan, by the way. Anyone who's weaker than them that they can conquer, that was God's plan. So before they leave off, though, Mika's warriors, the warriors stop by Mika's house, and they take his idols. And then they go to the priest, and you're like, you better fucking come with us, man. Because, you know, you better be a priest for all the Jews than for this asshole who's just has these idols. So they take his idols, which I guess they think have powers, and there's about, like, 600 soldiers with them. They go to Laish, they slaughter everyone, and, you know, Mika, meanwhile, sort of catches up with them, and he's like, hey, you took my shit. And they're like, get the fuck out of here. We've got a short fuse, man. If you're not careful, we're going to kill you and your whole family. Get the fuck out of here. So Mika just leaves. Yeah. That's what they say. They say we have a short fuse and just don't stick around. So they take the town. They install a priest who's like a descendant of Aaron. And they're like, everything is good until the Babylonians will kick their asses later on. But that's a different Bible story. Okay, the second Bible story, the last one we'll end on. No names are mentioned, but apparently there was a guy from the tribe of Levi who gets a concubine from Bethlehem. Unfortunately, his girlfriend's a bit of a slut. She cheats on him, and she goes back home. So he chases her down to persuade her to sort of, like, you know, come back with him. And the father, he's really welcoming. I guess they patch things up, and for, like, 3 days he feeds him, and he fucking beers him, and you know what I mean? Like, he gets him pretty drunk. Even on the fourth day, when he's trying to leave, he just keeps feeding him and just fucking making him drunk. Even by the fifth day, he's like, well, he was planning to leave in the morning. He's like, well, don't leave, you know, have fucking breakfast. And by breakfast, he's like, have lunch. And then finally, he's like, dude, I'm getting the fuck out of here. So they finally leave, and they're close to the town of Jerusalem, but they're like, we don't want to go to Jerusalem because there's no Jews there. That's right. The Jews didn't own Jerusalem. Those were the Jebusites, the one they slaughtered, apparently twice before, but there are still foreigners living there. Biblical inconsistency. Anyways, he doesn't want to stay in Jerusalem, so instead they go to Gibeah. It's a town owned by some of the tribe of Benjamin. And while he's there, no one will take him in. So they're sleeping in the town square, but an old man spots him, and he's like, look, you can't stick around here. It's pretty fucking dangerous tonight. Why don't you guys chill out of my house? While they're there, a group of thugs knock on his door, and they're like, bring out your guest. We're going to gangbang him. And the old man's like, don't do that to this man. Instead, take this man's girlfriend and my supple virgin daughter and do whatever you want with them. Just do not harm this man. Do not cornhole him. And they're not listening. So what the boyfriend does is he pretty much, like, you know in 300 where that dude says, this is Sparta, and fucking kicks that guy down the well?
Yep.
Okay, he does that to his concubine, locks the door behind him, and I guess the crowd, having a hole to stick their raging, rapey cocks in, pretty much have her way with her all night up until daybreak, where she crawls to the door and then proceeds to die.
There must have been some really horrific gang rapes back in the day. Like, we think those... You ever see one of those creepy 70s porns where it's like there's just a scene where, like, all these guys just rape one of the women in it? And you're just like, man, that's so fucked up. I think there's, like, some weird monkey thing in our brains. And I can't even imagine how, back in the BC era, how that shit rolled.
Yeah, there's probably some things we shouldn't be too proud of.
Just afterwards, she's like, you all raped me! And it's like, and that's how it went.
See you later. Well, she's not too lucky. She dies. And the boyfriend next door opens, you know, he, like, the next day opens the door, finds her dead. I don't know what he was expecting. Throws his concubine out to a mob of rapists. But anyways, he's like, get up, get up! She doesn't get up. She's fucking dead. So he puts her on his donkey, goes back home, and then he cuts her into a bunch of little pieces and then sends those pieces to each of the tribes of Israel so that everyone's like, what the fuck is going on here? And, like, all of them gather Jupalooza style to Mizpah, and there's, like, some 400,000 of them. And, like, everybody's all fired up being like, what's going on? This is horrible. We received all this. What's happening? So the boyfriend comes over there and he explains what the tribe of Benjamin just did to his girlfriend. And everyone's sort of, like, up at arms. So they draw lots. You know, divination, the thing that Christians say is evil. So they cast lots to decide who's going to fucking go. And they amass a fucking army of swordsmen. And they have, like, a pretty substantial army, about 100,000 strong, to go and confront the Benjamites. But here's the deal. All right, I'm going to be like one of those fight style, be like, ding, 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 in this corner, on the side of the Benjamin, 26,000 warriors with swords and 700 guys with slings that are left-handed and never miss. In the red corner, the Jewish coalition of the willing, with 100,000 swordsmen. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so they go up. Day one does not go so well for the coalition because those 700 archers that are left-handed are so badass, they kill like 22,000 of them. So, you know, you do the math. That's like 4,000 for 400 for every single one of them they had to kill. That's a lot of that's a lot that each one had to kill, but yeah. Anyways, they kill 22,000 of them. And then after that horrible day, the Jews go back. Coalition's like tail between their tails. Try to sacrifice a whole bunch of innocent animals, being like, I hope tomorrow goes better. But tomorrow's the next day's not that much better. There's like 18,000 casualties and none on the Benjamites. So it's not going too good. They can't do this forever. So they start lamenting to God. And then, like, one guy called Phinehas, who's the grandson of Aaron, he goes to God and he's like, man, what the fuck is happening? And God's like, okay, tomorrow's going to go better. And for it to go better, you're going to have to, like, get clever. So what they do is they set up an ambush, right? So third day's battle, they're getting fucking slaughtered by the Benjamites again. And the Benjamites are like, this is the same as before. We're going to kill another, like, 20,000 of them. Because I'm sure by the time you've been killing, like, 400 guys a day, you may have a thirst for blood. Just going to put that out there.
You may be feeling pretty confident.
You may be feeling pretty confident. So they chase them out. But unfortunately for them, it is a trap. And they get ambushed, and just almost all of them get killed. In fact, the coalition is so blood drunk, they go to town, slaughter everyone, and only about 600 Benjamite soldiers manage to escape. And once everything's kind of calmed down, they're all like, okay, we almost slaughtered our brothers here in the Civil War, but we also vowed that none of our daughters would be able to marry them. What are we going to do? They're going to die off. There's no more women. We literally killed them all. So in a kind of fit of pragmatic brilliance, they realize that one of the local towns of Gilead, which you've heard before in one of the previous podcasts, none of the people from the town sent any soldiers their way. So they're like, well, that's good enough for us. So they eradicate every male and woman that's ever gotten laid before, slaughter all of them, and they're left with roughly 400 virgins that they hand over to the Benjamites and say, here you go. Of course, that's not quite enough, right? There's a few hundred missing. So what they say is, all right, here's what you do. There's a festival that's going to happen called Shiloh, or near Shiloh, excuse me, one of their local, you know, one of their yearly festivals of the Lord. They're like, hide in the vineyards, and then when some girls come out, stragglers, kidnap them, and then that's going to be your bride. And then we'll explain to the fathers what happened, and it should be all good. So that happens. They kidnap some 200 or 300 other girls, enslave them in marriage, rape them, and who knows what. And then the tribe of Benjamin survives, but only barely. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of Judges. And the final word, by the way, is to say Israel had no king. And they always did whatever the fuck they wanted when they had no kings, which is a pretty fucking pro-monarchist kind of theme right at the end of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to work out very well for them, though. I mean, they're pretty bloodthirsty, warring people.
Yep, yep, that seems to be pretty much the way. If you've listened to this podcast and you're still a believer, I just got to shake my head at you. I'm like, that was horrible. The whole Joshua and Judges, that was awful. I mean, I feel bad for having put Carissa through so much of it. You only had to face the brunt end of Judges. You didn't have to deal with Josh, but that was a massacre. I'm not going to enjoy rewriting that fucking chapter. Okay, well, you know what? That pretty much wraps up the Book of Judges. So if you've heard this, that means you're an early listener, because it's only going to be available for 3 days. So if you're listening to this, there's probably a chance the Bible Stories is still kicking. Please go to the site and contribute. I'm the more we get, the more I'm going to be putting back in the site. The book tour that's going to be coming up, that I'm trying to organize, all of this stuff. Please, guys, go to the site, and if you're a fan, get Bible Stories. It's going to be awesome. If you didn't think the show was awesome, then something's wrong with it. I'm dealing with a rich source material of wickedness. I mean that more in the evil sense, though.
Yeah, quite.
All right, well, if you aren't a contributing member, then please go to the site, and you can also become a freebie member. This podcast will be available for freebies for probably another week after, because I don't want to cut you guys totally all off. But, you know, that's one of the ways that you guys help out by becoming a member and contributing. But, you know, also go to the site, become an early adopter of Bible Stories. And before we go, I'd like to thank everybody who's already made it possible. You guys saved pretty much The Good Atheist. We did it, guys. We've done it. Now I want to take it to new levels of success. If you'll humor me for a few moments, let's make this thing big rather than just survive. That's what I want. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Fortan.
I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.